by Anderson.
In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Boy, oh boy, it is Monday, and that means Alan Adams joins us right here in studio. All is right with the world. Hello, Al.
Here I am.
How are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Pretty good. Pretty good indeed. How was your weekend?
It was fine. Not nearly as busy as yours, but like, I had an okay weekend. Pretty low key, all things considered.
Yeah.
But that's all right.
Nothing wrong with that this time of year.
Right.
Now, where do you rank Thanksgiving among the holidays?
Oh, I love me some Thanksgiving.
Me too.
I am what the veterinarian would call food motivated. it's funny because I think a lot of it for me springs from when I was a kid, because I think you know this, but my dad was part of a very large extended family, and for a few years there, like, you know, when I was in elementary school, basically, the family sort of like pulled resources, and we would and they would rent the old Grange Hall in Levant Village, and everybody would come. And so it's like my dad was one of, I think, 12.
Wow.
All married, all with kids. And so, you know, we're talking like there's like 120 people at just big rows of tables. And it was great. Like, it was one of those things where it's just like, you know, you're hanging out with all your cousins, and like there were various cohorts that were all very similar in age.
Sure,
so it's
sure.
Like, you had the older kids, and then you had the group like myself with the younger kids who were hanging out with each other while also desperately trying to hang out with the older kids.
Right.
You know, generally failing at that, as is the way it was then. I assume it still is now. But yeah, and so like I sort of internalized that, and so like the Thanksgiving holiday has always been something that I've viewed with a degree of real importance. And it doesn't hurt that, like, you know, there are people out there who will insist that that turkey is bad. I'm not a believer in physical violence, Rich. But I'll fight you. I'll fight you about turkey. Right. I love turkey. And
I do too. And I eat it once a year.
Right. Like, that's the thing. It's like you're not roasting a turkey on a random day in March.
No.
Like, it's just like it's part of the sort of tradition. And you know, and then once you start talking about the sides, we'll forget about it.
Oh,
like,
my gosh.
Just like the savory sides, pies. It's just like,
and stuffing. Oh.
Yeah, and it's like I grew up surrounded by people who could cook. And then I married someone who's an excellent cook, and it's just like I am very fortunate on Thanksgiving Day. I'll just put it that way.
Well, I was saying to Larry Mahoney earlier, it's got the big three or four, the four F's. How can you not like a holiday that's about food, family, friends, and football?
Yes, exactly. You know, and it's wild too because you know, we're going to be spending Thanksgiving with Sheridan's parents, my in-laws, and it's really funny because until I entered the picture, they were not football people.
Really?
And I guarantee you, this Thursday, every second of football played will be on a television in that house.
Nice.
You know what I mean? And it's just like, you know, it feels good, you know, and I'm just going to go. I'm going to eat myself silly. I'm going to fall asleep on a couch.
Yes.
Watching one football game, wake up, and another football game will be on. And then I will eat some pie.
Eat some pie. Yes, that's right.
And I challenge anyone to tell me how that's bad.
Yeah.
There's nothing not great about all of that.
I'm all in. I'll watch the parade. I'll watch the dog show.
All of it.
Give me it all.
Yep. Every single bit of it.
Fantastic.
For sure.
All right, we're on the same team. I knew that already. Did you see any movies?
You know, I did see a couple.
Oh.
I watched one streaming offering on Netflix, and I watched one of the two box office releases.
Oh, boy.
Now, here's the thing. I tried to see both of the box office releases. One of them was not available to me. Because everything was full.
Wow. Well, I'm guessing it involved a green witch.
It did indeed. everything I've heard about Wicked from people who feel very strongly about Wicked, I don't have those feelings. Like I came of musical theater age a little too early,
right?
To register with Wicked. Like I read the book, and my understanding is it is vastly different.
Yeah.
But there are a couple of songs that I'm familiar with or whatever. But so I don't have the connection to Wicked that a lot of people do. The people I know who do have that connection, who watched it, feel very, very positive about it.
Oh, good.
And so it's like, bad. And like I said, it's a rare thing here in Bangor, Maine, to check out the seating chart at the local movie theater and see scattered individual seats as all that's available. Wow. For like 10 showings. Like it was just like the Wicked Army was out in full force this weekend. But I did get a chance to get into the other movie, I would argue a genius bit of counter programming, Gladiator 2.
Yes.
And so that was the other one that I got to see.
Well, what should we talk about first?
Let's talk about our Netflix experience.
Okay.
There were actually two films on Netflix that I would have that I was hoping to get a chance to see. Time got away from me, so I sadly did not have a chance to see what by all accounts is a very good film adaptation of The Piano Lesson. The August Wilson play that dropped on Netflix, I think stars Samuel L. Jackson, among others. But what I did see is a very sweet animated film called Spellbound. And it's basically, it's very, very fairy tale. Got a little bit of that sort of DreamWorks vibe to it. But it's like, it's a young girl living in a magical kingdom, and she has a secret. And her secret, shared by the trusted royal advisors, is that her mom and dad, the king and queen, were turned into monsters by magic.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty heavy stuff.
Like a year ago.
Jeez.
And they've basically been sort of keeping it under wraps.
Mm.
And it's our heroine's birthday. Her name is, I want to get it right. So we're in it's Princess Elian. And it's the magical kingdom of Lumbria.
Lumbria.
King Solon and Queen Elsmere are the ones who have been transformed into crazy monsters. So she reaches out to various and sundry sources before finding the oracles of the sun and the moon, who say, you know what? We might be able to fix this for you.
Mm.
And then, well, wouldn't you know it, a quest is undertaken. And away we go. Like, it's again, I'm not going to go too deep into the plotting because frankly it doesn't really matter all that much. It's a very sweet musical, like a lot of songs. Alan Menken was involved.
Oh, wow.
With the music. So it's like, I mean, and honestly, like, you watch it and it's like, oh yeah, this could have been a traditionally animated Disney movie in like 1993.
Mm-hmm.
Like you could see that happening. But I will say it's got a really lovely voice cast. Princess Elian is Rachel Zegler.
Nice.
One of the advisors, I forget his name, but he's delightfully played by John Lithgow.
Oh,
going
wow.
Full Lithgow. It's
very
great.
Good.
Our oracles are voiced by Nathan Lane, doing some inexplicable accent, and the always wonderful Titus Burgess.
Oh man.
And then the king and queen, when we do hear their voices, Javier Bardem and Nicole Kidman.
Well, that's a pretty good lineup.
That's a pretty good cast. Yeah. You know what I mean? The film itself, the songs are fine but forgettable. It looks pretty good. There are some fun little like magic animal bits and some monster stuff, some chase scenes, and you know. Underneath it all, it turns out to be, and you know, like as these sorts of like fables, fairy tales often do, turns out to be an allegory of sorts. I'm not going to tell you what it's an allegory for because that's a little bit of a spoiler.
Okay.
It's not necessarily what I expected it to be about. And once that clicked, it's like, it's kind of a different movie experience.
Mm.
In a good way.
Yep.
I think it just, how do I put this? It turns out to be a little bit more sophisticated than you think it is.
Uh-huh.
Like, not a lot, you know, and it's not like the sort of thing where, like a little kid is going to watch it and be like, and you know, just, you know, have their mind blown apart because of this big sort of reveal or whatever. But, speaking of little kids, I can I can see this being a movie that a certain type of child decides is their favorite for a little while. Hmm. And I can see many parents out there, well, cursing the name of Alan Menken and being like, if I have to hear this song one more dang time, I will burn this house down. All that being said, it's very sweet. It's very fun. The animation looks great. The voice performances are good. I always love it when you have these name actors in these, you know, in these movies, and they're, you know, and they give a crap, you know, because sometimes you can tell that someone's just standing, like standing in their pajamas, and like, you know, they come in, they do one take, and they're like, I got stuff to do. But yeah, everyone involved seemed really engaged, which was really nice. And yeah, it's, I mean, it's slight. It's only about an hour and a half long. Like, it's a pretty quick watch. It's not, you know, it's not going to enter the animated canon or anything like that. But particularly on a an upcoming weekend where kids are going to be, let's be real, kids are going to be spending a fair amount of time in front of a television.
Right.
And if they don't want to watch football, they're going to need to watch something. And hey, if you know, if the third, you know, the 300th watching of Frozen 2 isn't going to work, well, here's, I mean, this is basically like a riff on Frozen anyway. It's the same kind of, it all comes together, and these kids, you know, the kids will have a good time. And really, isn't that what it's about?
There you go, right there. All right, that's the story on Spellbound. How about Gladiator 2?
You know, I was back and forth on this. Like, I have been since I heard that it was becoming a thing, because it's like, you know, we've talked a number of times on the air about these movies, these sort of, I don't know, like we call them like legacy sequels or whatever, like sequels that take that come around many, many years after the movie they are a sequel of. Because, like, man, the first thing that you're forced to confront is the fact that Gladiator came out in 2000. Like, that movie, 25 years old.
Stop. Really?
I know.
Wow.
I know.
Wow. If you had asked me, I'd have thought, you know, 9, 10, 11, maybe.
Yep. 25 years, man. Wow. It's
ouch.
It happened so long ago. And so it's like, well, do we really need a sequel? And as it turns out, like, I'm not going to say that Ridley Scott knew that he had another one of these in the bag. But it connects with the first film much more cleanly than I would have expected. But yeah, it's like I said, Ridley Scott's back. The screenplay was written by David Scarpa. And yeah, it's basically, you know, you have a plot wise, it rings very familiar. Like, it's the vibe is very similar to what we had with Gladiator. Like, it's so okay, we'll set the scene here. So it's 16 years after Marcus Aurelius has died, and Rome is being ruled by twin emperors who are corrupt in the weirdly fey and pale way that Roman emperors are always portrayed as corrupt in these sorts of movies.
So it's the Winklevoss twins?
I mean, it's kind of, except much smaller, you know, and, yeah, so we've got, this guy named Hanno, and he's living, you know, he's living in the African state of Numidia, and Numidia is attacked by Roman forces, led by General Cassius, played beautifully by Pedro Pascal.
Oh, wow.
So the general comes, they lay waste to the place, they kill a bunch of people, including our man Hanno, who is played by Paul Mescal. I don't think I said that. No. Who is his, you know, including his wife, and he is enslaved and taken to the gladiator pits, the training grounds outside of Rome, to be, well, to either, you know, to fight or die. Like, right. That's kind of how it goes. The stable master is, I want to, Macrinus, I believe is how it was pronounced. Macrinus or Macrinus, I can't remember. Played by Denzel Washington.
Yes, I've seen him in the trailer.
Yeah, and here's the thing: like you know, as soon as I see Denzel's face, I'm like, all right, here we go.
Yeah,
because I'm a big believer in Mr. Washington, and he does not disappoint.
Good.
So he's like our man Hanno is in the pits, and Cassius has come back to Rome as a conquering hero, but he's also viewed with some suspicion by the corrupt and jealous emperors because, you know, like they do.
Right.
Anyone who could possibly be, part of their, against their power or whatever. He is married to Lucilla, played by Connie Nielsen, who you might recall was the lover of Maximus in the first film. And you may also recall that as Maximus was the climactic moment in that first film, turns out her kid might be his kid.
Whoa, boy.
And they send him off and they're like, get out of here. You know, you're not safe here. Joaquin Phoenix is going to kill you. Who do you suppose this Hanno fellow is, Rich?
Oh.
Yeah.
He's all grown up,
and he is coming back to Rome, and he's going to fight in the gladiatorial pits and going to do all the gladiator stuff, whether it's... And, I mean, we run the gamut. Like, he fights a bunch of baboons at one point, and then he fights, one of the big gladiators riding a rhino at one point.
I'm sorry, a rhino?
A rhino, yeah.
Okay.
And then they flood the place and do a sea battle. And it's just like a lot of those big set piece type, like Roman Colosseum things that frankly are the one of the big reasons why you go to see a movie called Gladiator 2.
Yep.
But then intrigue, betrayal, et cetera. It's not long before our man Hanno or Lucius Verus Aurelius, as is his real name.
Okay.
He's captured the attention of the Roman people, the affection of the Roman people, and the respect of his fellow gladiators. And he's gonna get revenge for his dad, for his grandfather, for everybody. He's gonna make it happen.
Now we got a movie.
There are a couple of reveals, so I'm not gonna go too much farther into the plot. But the truth is, it doesn't matter. It's not beat for beat, but it's very similar to Gladiator, the original movie. Ridley Scott clearly has affection for this world, for this type of movie. Maybe leaned a little harder on the CGI this time. Well, just because, it's had 25 years to get better.
Right.
So it makes sense. You get the vibe that it's like, he tried to go practical when he could, but there's nothing practical about...
Tough to flood a Colosseum.
This is what I'm saying. And so they do a pretty good job of that. And so what you get is this very classic sort of sword and sandals epic kind of film. It runtime is about 2:45. Not bad, though. A lot of times, it's one of those movies where... you could probably have, there's probably room to trim, but at no point was I bored. I wasn't like, let's get on with it. If anything, there were a couple of spots where I'm like, oh, that could maybe have been fleshed out a little bit and that would have been fine. But what makes movies like this work is you have actors who are able to believably portray these sorts of characters. And Mezcal's great. Yeah. It's funny. I was thinking about it while I'm watching it. I'm like, I know who he is. I've seen him and stuff. But it's like, he might be the first, I don't know if he's quite A-list yet, but he's on that edge.
Yeah.
He might be the first one since I became, aware of movies where I'm just not that familiar with him. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it's just like, I don't know if it's just because I haven't seen the stuff that he's done or necessarily anything like that. Like, clearly incredibly talented. He's ready made for a movie like this, to the point where he's even sort of there are just these small moments where it's like, oh, geez, did Russell Crowe do that in the first movie? Like, it's like he's there are these little, like, they pluck these little moments, like, and there are some that are very obvious, like there's the, you know, the hand brushing the grain motif, you know, where it's like, you know, and like picking up the sand, like there are these little moments where it's like they're sort of thematically tying everything together. But yeah, he's I mean, he's great. He looks legit as an action guy. Pascal's phenomenal. Man,
he's good.
I love him in everything he does, whether it's like Gladiator 2 or that crazy Nick Cage movie, or the friggin' Corona commercial.
Right?
Like,
right.
He's
great in that. He brings gravitas to a beer commercial.
It's weird. Yeah. It's weird, but he's so good, and he's so charming, and he's so fully commits. And you know, when you have that sort of energy, you know, in a major part, like, there are moments where you can kind of feel some of the people trying to, like, keep up.
Yeah.
And when you have someone like that who raises the bar, like, that's very, you know, that's very beneficial to your end product. Speaking of raising the bar, Denzel, man.
Yeah.
Like, and again, like, it's so effortless with him.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And it's like, and it's so wild because it's like, I mean, it's like,
what is he now? 66, 67?
Anyway, like, yeah. He's, and you know, but it's like he wears it well, and it's like, oh yeah, no, it's Denzel. Denzel's in a toga. Okay. You know, sure. It's like, it shouldn't work. Cause I mean, it's still, he's still very much Denzel Washington, and you know, and that's on me. Like that's one of those things where it's like, I'm just so connected with him as a performer that it's like, you know, it's hard to see him, I never forget that he's Denzel Washington, but that's not a bad thing. Sometimes it is a bad thing. You know, there are some actors who can't get out of their own way.
Right.
And it's like with Denzel, like, we know he can disappear into a role. We've seen him do it. However, for something like this, for, you know, this like grasping, ambitious sort of like, you know, political player and social climber, it's like, oh yeah, just be Denzel,
right?
Like just like weaponize that charisma and be that guy. But yeah, and just on and on and on, like just such wonderful performances. Like I said, the action sequences, the gladiator stuff is really cool and super interesting to watch. The palace intrigue stuff works. There's this whole subplot where Denzel keeps making bets with the senator, and he keeps betting on Paul Mescal, and the senator keeps bringing out his own guys, and Denzel just keeps doubling up until he owns the guy's house. And it's just like, it's just like stuff like that where it's like I love the fights and I love the, you know, the action stuff, but it's that weird like late stage empire like rot that's being portrayed in these various ways. That's very cool. There's actually one bit that echoes something that we understand to have actually happened in Roman history. I don't want to spoil it because it is hilarious. But it involves the Senate and one of the emperors and some of the choices that he makes for advisors.
Yeah.
Ah. I bet you know.
Yes,
I bet you can make a
pretty
guess.
Good idea.
Not the same, but very close.
Okay. All right.
So it's interesting because like this movie is not going to make a ton of money simply because like Wicked is taking up all the oxygen.
Right.
And I know that there were some cynical types out there who were trying to make Glicked happen in shades of Barbenheimer. But here's the thing, like Barbenheimer was very much an organic phenomenon. Like you can't push something like that.
No.
And don't get me wrong. Like I think it's a wonderful bit of sort of like counter programming, because you know I'm atypical. Like I'm a middle aged man, and I would very much enjoy watching Wicked. However, many of my age and demographic, perhaps not as interested in watching a Wizard of Oz themed musical. Just next door, you want to watch some dudes like wearing sandals and hammer on each other with swords? Yeah, you do. Right. And so
we'll meet you in the lobby after the show.
Exactly, because they're and it's funny, and I this can't have been planned. However, run times are almost identical, which I think is very funny.
That's great.
But yeah, so like I really enjoyed Gladiator 2. It's not as good as the first one, but I mean, the first one was like...
It's a classic.
Yeah, and it's like, I mean, like, it's got all kinds of hardware. Like, like, this one's not going to win any Oscars. Will it be in the conversation for a couple? Maybe. Like, probably some, like, below-the-fold, like, technical stuff. But if you told me that, like, Denzel or Pedro Pascal was going to get a supporting actor nod, I wouldn't be mad at it.
Cool.
But yeah, so Gladiator 2, not too bad.
There you go. Thank you, Al.
My pleasure.
Enjoy your Thanksgiving.
You as well.
You know I will. It's 542 here on Downtown.